Minnesota Senate Tax Committee. The first item on our agenda is adoption of the minutes from March 29th. Are there any corrections? Seeing none, the minutes are approved as presented. First bill on our agenda is Senate File 2504, Senator Herr. He's not here.
Senator Dames is.
Second bill is Senate File 1728, Senator Dames. Welcome to the committee. We look forward to your presentation.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members. And today I have Senate File 1728. Senate File 1728 is a bill that deals with the LGA. And in this particular community, they were having some issues with their city administrator, and it ended up some of the paperwork that needed to be filed didn't get filed. And so we're here today asking for some reprieve so that we can get that money out to the city of Echo. And I believe the amount on that is $46,060. And this would be the local government aid, LGA. And the 2020-21 Small Cities Assistance Payments. Senator Rest and Madam Chair, that would be kind of the contents of this bill, and I'd certainly be happy to try to answer any questions. And we do have a letter that was sent in by one of the council members. They apologize for not being able to be here today, but there is a letter that they did send in.
Thank you very much, Senator Dames. questions or comments for Senator Dames? We hope that this won't happen again, Senator Dames.
Correct.
Seeing none, Senate File 1728 will be laid over for inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Our next bill, that is Senate File 1729. Similar situation.
yes, thank you, Madam Chair and members. Senate File 1729 is a similar situation. It's with the city of Morton, and they had some changes in the city leadership, and so this just did get missed, and that's unfortunate, but I guess those things happen. And this is a similar situation, only this one is $79,476, and this would be the 2021 portion of the local government aid and the 2021 Small Cities Assistance Payments. And today we do have the Morton City Clerk Treasurer, Pam Ring, with us, and I think she was going to join by Zoom.
Ms. Ring, welcome to the committee. We look forward to your testimony. Is she there? Ms. Ring, we are aware that you are on Zoom. We'll wait just a moment for your testimony and then move on. Senator Nelson, you had a question?
Oh, no, it was just a comment for later. At the end of the testimony.
Senator Dames, appears that she's not with us.
No, I'm here. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. My computer was not working for the speaker or the microphone.
Well, Ms. Ring, if you would just identify yourself for the record, please read your testimony.
My name is Pam Ring, and I am the clerk for the city of Morton.
So would you like to speak in favor of this bill?
I am requesting that the city of Morton would be able to receive the money back that was withheld Unfortunately, we weren't able to get our audit done in time. We had a lot of unfortunate events happen that precluded myself getting the audits done on time. I was a newer clerk at, I came into a situation that was not the best. They were behind on the audit in 18. 19's audit was behind. The books here were horrible at that point in time. I was a brand new clerk. I went into a police investigation and just trying to dig the city out of a hole and all of the other things that kept getting piled on. As much as I tried, I was not able to keep my head above water to get the audit in on time.
Thank you, Ms. Ring. Are there questions or comments for the testifier? Seeing none, the Senate file 1729 is laid over. Senator Nelson, do you want to ask a question?
No, I was just going to mention briefly, I didn't want to interrupt the testifier, both 1728 and 1729 were in the conference committee last year. So we've heard these. Thank you.
Seeing no further comments, Senate file 1729 is laid over. Thank you, Senator Daines.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
The next bill is Senate file 3143. Senator Zhang. He's not here either. Right. This is going very fast, Senator. The next bill is 1715. Senator Putnam, if you are ready.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The main thrust of Senate File 1715 is to eliminate the current interest rate floor of 10% that is assessed on property tax delinquencies. The Department of Revenue establishes the interest rate on property tax delinquencies each year according to a formula based on the prime rate. But the 1991 legislature established a floor interest rate of 10% regardless of what the indexed rate is. The problem here is that the indexed rate has not hit 10% since November of 1991. So the state is inflating this rate on the backs of the people who struggle. The 10% floor makes it that much more difficult for distressed homeowners facing tax forfeiture to pay their taxes and to keep their homes. Now, Madam Chair, members, the bill has two sections. Section 1 eliminates the floor tax rate. Section 2 reflects a recommendation from the Association of Minnesota Counties and the Minnesota Association of County Officers. It gives counties the flexibility to establish by resolution an annual rate lower than the revenues rate. Madam Chair, members, tax forfeiture is not good for either the struggling homeowner or for the county. Our policy should aim to avoid tax forfeiture and help homeowners pay those taxes and stay in their homes. This bill would fulfill that goal. There's no opposition. This bill was included in this committee by this committee in the omnibus tax bill last year, and I ask for your support. I have one witness, Madam Chair and members, and that's Ron Elwood from Legal Aid.
Mr. Elwood, if you would identify yourself for the record, you may proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Ron Elwood with Legal Aid, and I'd also like to thank Senator Drazkowski for co-authoring this bill and Senator Putnam for bringing it forward, and thank you for hearing it. I would just simply say that Legal Aid has had numbers of clients who have struggled trying to repurchase their homes, keep their homes in tax forfeiture, and we just have had experience that this high interest rate has been a barrier to them to keep their homes. And with that, I appreciate your support and happy to answer any questions. Thank you very much.
Any questions or comments from Mr. Elwood or Senator Putnam? Seeing none, thank you very much. And Senate File 1715 is laid over. Next bill is Senate File 2765, Senator Housechild.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Today I have Senate File 2765, which would expand Minnesota's film and TV tax credit program. It's my opinion that Minnesota has a lot to offer when it comes to the film industry. We have a lot of unique attributes, from my district in the Northland with the Boundary Waters and the North Shore, sort of showcasing an ocean-like atmosphere. We have the urban environments of the Twin Cities, the suburbs and row homes that we have in the metro area. We have our farm and agriculture, like in Senator Weber's district and others. So we have a lot to offer that the film industry is really looking for and places that other states may not have. And so in my opinion, we have a real opportunity to expand an industry in our state that would pay dividends for years to come. 2 years ago, the legislature passed Minnesota's first film tax credit with the goal of creating this powerful economic development tool for our state, and it hasn't disappointed. Tax credit programs like this have had an impressive track record in other states and around the world, and now we in Minnesota have to see those benefits as well. Since January of 2022, 10 projects have been approved for a total of $4.5 million in tax credits. These include 5 feature films, 2 TV series, and 1 package of commercials. Total estimated spending by these projects is over $20 million. Of that total spending, $7.8 million created jobs for over 750 Minnesotans. Current law has the program at $5 million with a sunset in place. My bill would extend the program to $25 million and would eliminate the sunset. It would also make some technical changes that would improve the program. And I want to kind of explain why we're doing this. While it's great that we created this program 2 years ago and provide these credits and have had some success, there really is sort of a critical threshold that is necessary in the film industry to recruit and retain folks that are interested in creating long-term TV series, movies, and the like. So by expanding this tax credit to a threshold that other states like Georgia and Oklahoma have, we would be able to compete with bringing those folks to our state, and see an exponential growth in this industry. In addition to that, because of the movement towards longer-term TV series, a lot of these industry folks are looking for a much longer certainty in the tax credits that are available to them. So it's not just the expansion of the actual amount, but it's also sort of the timeline and getting rid of that sunset so that we can really recruit and make Minnesota a premier location for the film industry. With that, I do have 2 or 3 testifiers. Yes.
You first need to go through the sections of the bill.
Sorry, Madam Chair, I forgot about that. Thank you for the reminder. So Section 1, this is the definitions, clarifies the definition of project for purpose of expenses eligible for credits by specifying that the minimum $1 million expenditure must be made in a consecutive 12-month period, beginning with the expenditures are first paid in Minnesota, so rather than a taxable year. Section 2, applications and allocations, this increases the available allocation for the credit from $4.95 million to $24.95 million annually. It also strikes the language pertaining to the sunset that I just described. Section 3 is strikes provisions relating to the expiration of the credit on income and corporate franchise. Section 4 strikes provisions relating to the expiration of the credit in the insurance premium tax chapter. And Section 5 is a repealer that repeals the credit sunset. Right now, the credit is currently set to expire on January 1st, 2025.
Okay. We have, let's see, where are we here? Melody Behan, if you'd identify yourself for the record. We're pleased to have your testimony.
My name is Melody Behan. I'm the Executive Director of Minnesota Film and TV. Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for allowing me to testify in support of Senate File 2765. We are grateful to the legislature for passing our first production tax credit in 2021, and we're proud of the 10 projects that have chosen Minnesota because of the program and the more than $20 million in new spending it's bringing to the state. But the 2021 bill was a small pilot, and we need to take the next step to fulfill the promise of more spending and high-paying jobs in for Minnesotans. Since our tax credit program began, other states, recognizing the economic benefits of film and TV production, have continued to strengthen their tax credits, making our program the smallest in the country. We're looking at a landscape where most other programs have annual caps ranging from 30 to 400 million, or in 14 states, no cap at all. We have also struggled with the sunset on the program. Films and episodic programming can sometimes take years to develop, and having a four-year sunset has cut us out of many discussions about films in development and certainly out of any discussion of a series. Again, if you look at what Minnesota is competing with, most states with strong industries doing TV and streaming series have either extended or in many cases eliminated their sunsets altogether. Other states have recognized the value of these credits, and this bill will help Minnesota do more of what we are already doing really well. Decision makers in the industry have shown great interest in investing in our state, and there is more to come if we can expand and improve our program. I'd like to bring your attention to some letters in your packet that illustrate several things. Producer Mandy June Turpin describes choosing Minnesota as a location for her film Mary Kiss Cam and her plans to bring at least two more projects here. Filmmaker Matt Burns' letter is just one example of the many Minnesotans we've lost to other states over the years who can now bring their work home because of the tax credit. You'll also see letters illustrating the breadth of support for the bill and outlining economic benefits from Sherry Marshick at the Upper Midwest Film Office, the Duluth Chamber of Commerce, Chisholm Inn General Manager Michelle Scott, and Rochester filmmaker Sarah Hamilton. An increase to $25 million and elimination of the sunset in Minnesota would allow us to turn the interest generated by the passage of the tax credit into commitments from studios to bring their business here and provide the high-paying union jobs that come with it. Thank you for allowing me to testify.
Thank you. I'm sorry.
Madam Chair, I have another testifier, Brian Simpson.
Yes, welcome to the committee, and I'm sorry that I was distracted, ma'am. Mr. Simpson, if you'd identify yourself, if you would. You can continue testimony.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Brian Simpson. I'm a member of IATSE Local 490. I'm also here, we work in conjunction with several other labor unions, which you'll find in your packets. There's letters from SAG-AFTRA, the Teamsters, the AFL-CIO, among others. Local 490 is a labor union that represents film and TV crew in the state of Minnesota. Our members work in almost every aspect of film and TV production. There's many in this room right now, but crafts that we and positions that we do cover include office staff, prop masters, wardrobe stylists, location managers, script supervisors, grips, gaffers, electricians, painters, set carpenters, set decorators, makeup artists, sound mixers, craft service, set medics, and even special effects. These are all real Minnesotans, and they're all working real middle-class jobs. While our members are skilled technicians in their craft, these jobs do not require a college degree. Film and TV production is modern-day manufacturing that is entirely dependent on human labor. These jobs cannot be automated. These are all real people working in a skilled profession. Senate File 2765, the Film Production Tax Credit, is a job creator that needs to be expanded. If this bill were to pass as written, our current labor force would not be enough to handle the increase in production. This would allow Local 490 in the Minnesota film industry to aggressively expand with new job creation and new jobs training programs. Some of that job growth will be handled through on-the-job training. Some of that will be longer-term programs. Local 490 has already begun working on this issue by partnering with Inspire MSP.
Excuse me, sir, in the back there, we don't allow photography in the hearing room. Mr. Simpson, you may proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Local 490 has already begun working on this issue by partnering with Inspire MSP to create a path forward for underprivileged youth in the Twin Cities to find career opportunities in film and TV production after they graduate high school. In the midst of a national labor shortage, why would one industry think that it could aggressively expand in job creation? Because it's fun. This is the type of industry that people leave Minnesota to find in other states. This is a creative way for us to keep those Minnesotans that are seeking creative careers. The film and TV jobs that will be created by Senate File 2765 will be union jobs. Film crew will receive health and retirement benefits. They will be protected by collective bargaining agreements, and they will be paid middle-class wages. The film production tax credit has had a great start, but we have room to grow, and with your help and your support of Senate File 2765 as it is written, we can make that happen here in Minnesota. Members of the committee, thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions or comments for the author or his testifiers? Senator Nelson.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Hochschild, thank you for bringing this forward. And as many know, when this was passed in 2021, it was a Senator Tomasoni bill. And I was pleased to work with him on that. And I also just wanted to note, Madam Chair, the value of removing that sunset, now that we particularly have the Tax Expenditure Review Commission, makes it so that every tax expenditure is reviewed on a regular basis. And I'm just extremely supportive, and I would encourage members, since working on this in 2021, it's given me some new lenses through when I watch a thing. I don't get to watch a lot of TV, but when I do, it's streaming because it's on my time schedule when I can watch something, not a network schedule. And what I've noticed is so much of what is streaming, and if you watch through to all the credits, and you will see I am surprised. Oh, my watch is talking to me. Sorry. Siri likes this too. But the thing is, at the end of the credits, you will see things like the Georgia Peach, or most recently I've seen Wyoming. I mean, there's so many states now that have these tax credits, and I can't help but think it's really a large function of streaming and these individual platforms, and I just think it makes it all the more valuable that we continue to support and expand this in Minnesota. So thank you, Senator Hochschild.
Further questions or comments? Senator Hochschild, is that the extent of your testimony?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, and thank you, Senator Nelson, for your kind words about the program. I would just say I want to do everything I can to showcase Minnesota. I want to recruit the best talent here for any industry, but I think the testifier, Mr. Simpson, said it right. These are fun jobs, and these are opportunities that Minnesotans are leaving our state for other opportunities in other states. So let's bring them here, let's showcase our state, and let's create jobs and opportunities. So thank you for the opportunity, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Hochschild. Senate File 2765 will be laid over. I will clarify a comment that I made earlier about photography in the room. The photographer that's in here is a Senate employee, and the press is also invited, but not cell phone photos by people otherwise in the public that are in the room. The next bill is Senate File 1757. Senator Nelson.
Do you want me to say it?
January 1st. Senator Nelson brings us Senate File 1757. Senator Nelson, I believe you have an author's amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do. I have the A4.
Senator Nelson offers a A4 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Senator Nelson, I don't know at what point you want to explain how your amendment fits in with the bill, but do it as you wish.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. The amendment does two things. It gives the city an option to post one ballot question for all projects listed with their amounts, or as current law is, Madam Chair, as you know, specific question, one voting question for each item. And we, as you all recall who were in taxes last year, we had a lot of discussion about how that could be not the most efficient way to do that, and it could cause some unintended consequences. So this is just, in a sense, Madam Chair, it goes to our conversation yesterday where it's a general law change, or it could be a general law change, I should say, which is allowing one ballot question. And then the second thing it does, just a simple, it changes the name to the Sports and Recreation Complex.
Well, Senator Nelson, would you go through the bill then?
Yes, I'd like to very much, Madam Chair. Section 1 is just a local resolution before application for the authority. And what I would like you to know about Section 1, it does strike the or sets aside those definitions for capital projects. The Tax Committee will recall that that was a new definition of capital projects that was instituted probably 2 to maybe 3 years ago. And what we have found in the Tax Committee, as the Chair mentioned yesterday, sometimes we have a lot of notwithstandings, and at some point it's time for us to consider a general law change. And so Section 1 just strikes or sets aside that definition of capital projects. We found that while that works well in some cases, particularly in larger areas, regional centers, metro areas, it does not work. It does not meet the needs. Section 2, Madam Chair and Committee, authorizes the extension. And what that extension is, committee members, it extends the 1/2 cent sales tax for the projects that I'm going to tell you about in Section 3. And as required, obviously, this is subject to voter approval. One thing to note, though, members, is this is requesting that the election be held in 2023. And that's only, and I know we'll see later, most likely, Madam Chair and committee members, a general law change to have these perhaps at just general elections. But because of the calendaring of 2023 and the current sales tax getting to the point where it would need to be extended or extinguished, we don't know that we can count on having our legislation in place by 2023 to make this happen.
Senator Nelson, I'm trying to follow back and forth from your amendment and the and the sections of your bill, and I don't see where their reference to capital project defined is it in the where is it?
Oh, Madam Chair, I had to go through that last night too. And basically, this is just in addition to what was in the bill. This first part of the amendment on page 1, it just removes that language from current statute requiring a capital project description. But I will turn it over to Ms. Pollack to give further clarification.
I support that change, by the way, but I want to make sure that I know where it is. So
yes,
thank you. So I'm going to ask Ms. Pollack to explain all the references to laws 1998, et cetera, and so that we're quite clear of the additional language and particularly not only getting rid of the capital project requirement, but the language on 2.7 to 2.12 in the amendment is specific with regard to how you present the questions,
correct,
if you will. So, Ms. Pollack, if you would help us, please.
Madam Chair, excuse me, members. To answer your first question about where is the language regarding the definition of capital project, the amendment is a little different in that it adds another section to the bill, and so the sections that you may be looking at in the bill are a bit off. However, the summary is to the bill as proposed to be amended. So the first page of the amendment does strike the definition of capital project in the general law statute governing local sales taxes. So that would add a new section one to the bill, and that would go in right at the beginning of the bill after line 1.5 of the bill itself.
Okay.
And then the bill goes on, and Madam Chair, you asked about the references to laws 1998, Chapter 389, and so forth. That was the original date of the authorization for the Rochester local sales tax,
and it
has been amended several times since then.
Okay.
In session law. So when we amend session law, we need to oftentimes include these multiple references where the session law has been amended. And then going on to page 2 of the amendment, this starting on 2.3 through 2.6, this is the reference that Senator Nelson mentioned about holding the election in 2023. And then on 2.7 to 2.12, this is the language Senator Nelson mentioned addressing the allowing the question or the each project on the ballot to be presented in one question. Of course, they would still have the option to do it each project as a separate question, but this allows them the option to do it in one question. Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, I don't think Senator Nelson has gotten to the rest of the amendment yet, but I'm happy to go through that if you'd prefer.
Go ahead.
Okay. Madam Chair, starting on 2.13 to 2.16, these are just deleting references to the definition of capital project that was stricken earlier in the amendment. If that definition is stricken, we don't need to notwithstand projects that don't otherwise meet that definition. On 2.17, this is some language that pertains to the flood control and water quality project. And this just specifies that any flood control and water quality projects would not include removing the MN00515 dam. And then on 2.18, it changes the title of the in the bill, it's regional community and recreation complex to a sports and recreation complex. Starting on 2.20, excuse me, this is some clarifying language to say that the revenue sharing of the $10 million economic development fund, as Senator Nelson will describe in a moment, I think, $5 million of that $10 million is for economic development projects in the city of Rochester. The other $5 million is for projects in the Rochester Metropolitan Statistical Area. This language on 2.20 just clarifies that second $5 million has to exclude the city of Rochester, of course, because the first $5 million was dedicated to the city. And then on 2.21, this extends the date of the imposition of the tax from 18 to 24 years. And I think this was just a correction from the city's calculations of the time that the tax would need to be imposed to fund the projects.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Pollack. Senator Nelson, why don't you then proceed with the content of the bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Ms. Pollack. Yes, and members, as you might know, this bill was before us last year, was part of the tax conference committee report, and the A4 is just the amendment needed to update update that bill with the things we've learned so far. Probably the one thing we haven't discussed yet, Madam Chair. Well, actually, I think I'm going to turn it over to my testifiers. I was going to describe the projects, but I'll just, as we seek to renew, I'll
turn. We did not adopt the amendment, apparently. All those in favor of the A4 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Senator Nelson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and committee. So most of what we've already discussed, I think I'll turn it over to my testifiers to specifically describe the projects and why this is so important to Rochester in the region. Today, Madam Chair and committee members, I have Allison Zelms with me, our city administrator. And on the right, I have our city council president, Brooke Carlson. And then I have John Wade will be testifying also. So I believe perhaps I should start with our city council president, Madam Chair.
Ms. Carlson, is that it? Yes. Welcome to the committee. If you would identify yourself for the record.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair, Senator Nelson. For the record, my name is Brooke Carlson. I'm the city council president in the city of Rochester. I want to thank Senator Nelson for her engagement with us and work on this renewal of our existing local sales tax last year and inclusion of this provision in the tax agreement last year, and for her time and Senator Hochschild's time earlier this session in reviewing our request more thoroughly. This request is to renew the City of Rochester's existing half-cent sales tax that the state has granted Rochester since the early 1980s. I'm here to share the City Council's support as shown in a resolution we passed in December, submitted to the committee to pursue authorization from the legislature to renew our city's local sales tax. The resolution and request include four projects: an economic vitality fund, street reconstruction, flood control and water quality, and a regional sports and recreation complex. These four project requests are based on the needs of Rochester as a regional hub in Greater Minnesota, and our role in the region warrants our local sales tax request. For example, we are a regional hub for workforce and commerce as we host 20 to 30,000 commuters per day into Rochester. This regional traffic uses our local assets, such as our roads, and relies on our flood control for economic activity. Our sales tax was previously used to build the flood control system you'll see if you come downtown, but that was based on 100-year flood events. We've had 400-year flood events in the past 15 years. Each time it floods, that system protects over $250 million worth of property. We need to strengthen the system to be more resilient to the changing conditions in our growing city. These projects are important investments in our community, our region, and our state. This bill would provide the residents of Rochester the option to vote on these items in November. And in closing, our city looked at how to make the biggest impact with the resources and tools available to us as a city. And we appreciate the committee's consideration in allowing us to continue to use the tool to provide important services and infrastructure. We've been responsible and successful as a city and look forward to the continued opportunity using this tool to support the great work for the region and our state. And next is City Administrator Zelms.
Ms. Zelms, welcome to the committee. And if you'd state your name for the record, we pleased to have your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, committee members. For the record, my name is Allison Zelms. I am the city administrator for the City of Rochester. Just have a few comments to add, and I will be available for any questions on the proposal. The city is a financially responsible entity. We are one of few in the state that maintains the highest rating possible on our financials, which is a AAA bond rating, and one of even fewer, maybe the only city in the state of Minnesota that has maintained that rating for 50 years. Despite our great management of our financial resources, we do have some challenges. We are a 55 square mile city, so by land area, we're the sixth largest city in the state of Minnesota. And if we were a county in our boundaries, we would be the 11th largest county. We serve a diverse community of residents and businesses across the region. And the city provides significant services by ourself, an international airport, regional public library, wastewater treatment plant, a public transit bus system, our road system for 55 square miles, the police department and fire department are operated by the city, and we have a robust park system and all of the other things that make up a city. So we are providing regional amenities from our resources that residents from medium and large cities do expect, but we're doing that without many of the other funding sources available to other communities, especially larger cities in the metropolitan area. So I just want to really reiterate that continuation of this tool is critical for Rochester, and it's a key building block for our financial system that we rely on to run our city and provide services to residents, employee commuters, visitors to the region, and we do that on behalf of the region and the state of Minnesota. Thank you for your time.
Are there questions or comments for these two witnesses? I'm seeing none. Mr. Wade, present. Welcome to the committee, if you'd identify yourself for the record.
Good morning. My name is John Wade. I'm president of Rochester Area Economic Development, Inc. Thank you for the opportunity. Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, members of the committee. Many brilliant things have been said already about this proposal, so I will simply say this. This is a regional center of economic activity. We are very proud of the success that Rochester has had economically. But Rochester entirely depends upon those 30,000 plus people a day that come into the community that add so much to it and make their own community strong. The economic development portion of this document, of this bill, also helps grow and expand communities within the metropolitan statistical area. That's Dodge County, Olmsted County, Wabasha, and Fillmore counties. And they're incredibly important to us. And this bill, in part, allows not only important projects in Rochester to happen, Madam Chair, but also throughout the area. So when we look back at the history and we look at that we have been able to create 200 new jobs, and that equals about $12 million in payroll. There are a number of things that we have done to help small business develop and grow and prosper. Madam Chair, members, we would ask your support and thank you for this wonderful opportunity to be here today and continue to grow the great state of Minnesota.
Thank you, Mr. Wade. Wade, are there comments or questions for Senator Nelson or Mr. Wade? Seeing none, Senator Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Nelson, I'm reading the regional portion of the bill, and I haven't seen this language before, but it looks like, as far as I can tell, what...
Senator Drazkowski, could you point out what the language...
Oh, Madam Chair, lines 2.20 to the end of the page.
Thank you.
So... In the past, the way this is handled, if I remember correctly, and I know we did talk about the Rochester area statistical, metropolitan statistical area, and last time when this was renewed, it was to a particular area or, what's the word I'm looking for?
Radius.
Radius. Thank you, Senator Nelson. A particular rate, it was a 50-mile radius, if I remember correctly, or something like that. It was a particular radius. And so this is a change, and I understand that. But last time, the money, if I remember correctly, was allocated to the EDAs of those communities for them to decide how they would spend the money. As I read this, it says that Rochester is going to decide who gets the money in those outlying communities, how much and for which purpose. And I don't like that. As somebody who represents those communities, I think the people in our communities have the ability to make those determinations and figure out which are the best ways to guide the economic development efforts in their communities. This puts Rochester to be the kingmaker, or Rochester to be the determiner of where those funds go and what's going to happen. And I haven't seen anything like that in our laws before. So I struggle with that, but Senator Nelson, maybe you can explain more.
Yeah, Senator Chair. Nelson? I'll turn it over to Mr. Wade to start.
Thank you, Senator. I can see how somebody might see that, but Rochester Area Economic Development, it has Rochester in the name, but our organization is served by many of the communities you mentioned and that serve on our board, whether that's Chatfield, Stuartville, Pine Island, and other communities. It is a regional economic development authority. And we work very collaboratively with communities throughout the metropolitan statistical area to help grow and advance their economic opportunity. So I am proud to have Rochester in our name. The board of directors of the organization, as well as our finance committees, and Joel Young, who's the city administrator from Chatfield, or others would collaborate this point, that we absolutely, and other members of the legislature in that metropolitan statistical area, have been very clear about ensuring that their communities are represented in that decision-making process. So it's not a small group from Rochester deciding that, but literally those communities are represented in the oversight of not only our operations, but also prospectively how that money will be best invested, because to your point, communities know that best, and we respect that, and I have for years, and will continue to do so. So
Senator Piskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Mr. Wade, this doesn't respect that. And in the past, the way it's been dealt with is that the communities would get an allocation based on their proportion. If I remember correctly, maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong. This says there's a brand new regional economic development entity that is going to decide where the money goes, very likely disproportionate to their population, based on whatever the interest of the group that you've assembled. I have no idea exactly how that membership happened. Certainly the people in those communities didn't elect people to show up at your development group. But this is not empowering people locally to do what they want to do in their community. About half of this money comes from outside the area. I'd like the amount to be more than $5 million. It should be the full $10 million and not $5 million. And Senator Nelson and I have talked about that. But this doesn't respect the autonomy of those communities and doesn't allow them to do what they need to do in their community. I can assemble a group too. I mean, and say, well, that person's from, you know, the next county over, that person's from Zumbrota, so suddenly they're fully represented in this. That doesn't ring true. So I hope we can see some different language that more closely matches the approach that has been used in the past, Mr. Wade and Senator Nelson and Madam Chair, because this doesn't do the trick.
Are there any other comments or questions for Senator Nelson or the testifier? Senator Nelson?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I thank the committee. I want to thank Senator Dreskowski for airing his comments. We have spoken about this. And just to note, this is the metropolitan statistical area is already a politically geographically defined area. What happened 10 years ago when the first Rochester sales tax sharing provision was passed, you might recall that that was in conference committee. It didn't have the advantage of being vetted as thoroughly as this, and it was a random radius, as you might recall, and the random radius was, well, we just have to make sure that we include these particular senators or these particular House members. And, you know, I just don't think that is the best way to decide policy. And I appreciate the fact that we are using Rochester Metropolitan Statistical Area as a jurisdictionally already defined area. And Senator Putnam, you and I have spoken before about regional centers and the unique nature of those. And I see this as one way to look at regional centers being able to incorporate and have a full regional aspect instead of our individual cities. And I will say it's been highly successful in Rochester, been very successful in bringing the region together to drive economic development. So, Madam Chair, committee, thank you for the time. I encourage and ask for your support.
Thank you, Senator Nelson. Senate File 1757 is laid over, as amended. Senator Herb, Senate File 2504. Senator Hurd, there is an amendment. Do you want that offered on your behalf?
Yes, Madam Chair, there is a simple amendment.
Senator Weber moves the A1 amendment to Senate File 2504. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Senator Hurd, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chairess and members, for hearing our bill today to address the accelerated forfeiture for targeted neighborhoods. The bill is a special one for Ramsey County. We're asking for a special law that allows the county to expand the period of these redeeming lands in targeted neighborhood sold to the state at tax judgment sale to have the same 3 years that other properties in the county do. I want to save the rest of the time for my testifier, Commissioner Rena Moran, to speak about this bill, and also Lori Malansky, in case the question get more in-depth. She can also be a backup Q&A person. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Commissioner Moran, welcome to the committee. And please proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members, and good to be here. So, Madam Chair, in the late 80s, St. Paul established policies and procedures for the allocation of urban revitalization action program funds, including procedures to identify neighborhoods having higher unemployment, lower medium household income, and a greater proportion of substandard housing than the city as a whole. The city established target neighborhoods. That was the target neighborhoods as meeting certain eligibility requirements. The statutory redemption period for all land not defined as homestead land located in these target communities could be accelerated from 3 years to 1 year and tax forfeited to the state of Minnesota for non-payment of property taxes. At the time, policies to aid neighborhood revitalization were initially adopted, and thereafter, one of the city goals was to reduce the negative impact of tax delinquent and tax forfeited lands within the targeted communities through the utilization of the accelerated tax redemption period. The city now finds that that concerns regarding properties having delinquent taxes or tax forfeited status shifted and has now been replaced by concerns that the active real estate market is now displacing the current resident of the targeted communities. Based upon new concerns, the City Council found the policy to accelerate forfeitures and the sale of tax delinquent properties within these communities' pursuit is no longer the solution within these communities. So the problem is that St. Paul, and also the solution is that St. Paul took action in 2022 to no longer participate in the targeted community revitalization program. This change will first apply to property starting in tax payable year 2024. These properties will have 3 years instead of one to pay back any taxes owed that aligns with all of the other counties. This change does not apply to taxes that have already been included on a tax statement payable year 2022 or where the assessment year has already been commenced in payable year 2023. The redemption period was already determined for these years and statute does not allow it to be changed once determined. This means that non-homestead properties in these once designated targeted communities will still be treated differently than other properties across Ramsey County. They will still have only 1 year to pay back property taxes. So what we would like you to do, and we hope that this will meet your values, is that we would like to pursue this legislation allowing us to apply the 3 year redemption period instead of the 1 year redemption period to properties located in the targeted communities in tax year 2023 and forward. This legislation will allow for all properties across Ramsey County to have the 3 year redemption period uniformly applied beginning in 2023, thereby eliminating the disparities caused by the statutory accelerated forfeiture provision. We have talked with the city and the realtors and are not aware of any opposition to this bill. I want to thank you, Madam Chair. And again, we also have the Property Tax Division experts here if you have any further questions.
Are there questions for Commissioner Romaine? I'm sorry, Moran or Senator Herr? Seeing none, and I neglected to ask you to identify yourself, Commissioner Moran, but
sorry.
I did it for you.
Yes,
so
good morning.
Thank you so much for being with us. If there are no further questions or comments, Senate File 2504 is laid over as amended.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Senator Ress, and the rest of the members.
He needs to take a gallery. The next bill is Senate File 3143. Senator Jean.
Hello, Madam Chair and committee members. I have before you Senate File 3143. It's a bill authorizing the City of Moundsview to impose a 1.5% local sales tax to finance a amateur sports facility and recreational facility for construction up to $16.5 million. It's a project that it's going to have regional benefit. Certainly, the demographics of the folks using the facilities are changing within the past decade, and certainly constituents from my area are going to that facility. And I have a local city administrator and city council member here with me to testify on the bill.
Thank you very much. See no need to go through the bill section by section. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Mealhouse.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Gary Mealhouse, and I am a member of the Moundsview City Council. Madam Chair, members, on behalf of Mayor Al Hall and the entire council, including Council Member Sherry Gunn, who's in the audience with us today, we want to thank you and extend our sincere appreciation for the hearing time and opportunity to share our Moundsview project. We also want to extend our thanks and appreciation to Senator Zhang for his support and authorship of our bill. The council is asking for a 1.5% voter-approved local sales tax to help fund our portion of a $33 million expansion to our existing community center. The $16.5 million that Senator Zhang mentioned is our obligation as a city, obviously. The expansion consists of three gymnasiums. Our facility does currently have a gymnasium, fitness centers, locker rooms, meeting rooms, a concession area, and an update to the facility's entrance and reception area. Upon completion, the facility will serve as a regional sports and recreation venue for the entire Northeast metro area, and there is no similar facility in the entire region. Twin Cities Gateway, a 10-city convention and visitor bureau, has a strong sports and recreation focus and has stated there is a high demand already for such a venue. The addition of boys volleyball as a sanctioned high school sports will increase the already high demand for indoor sporting venues that support basketball, volleyball, and pickleball. The city hired Convention Sports Leisure to conduct an economic viability study, which came back positive, and retained Codet Architects to develop our concept plans and Krauss Anderson to provide cost estimates. The local option sales tax is expected to generate $120,000 to $150,000 a year, which will cover a portion of the city's financial obligation. The city will use a portion of reserves and will ask the voters to approve this sales tax option with an additional levy, which in combination will fund the project. The city does own all the land, so we are shovel ready from that perspective. To date, there have been 6 public meetings and 6 more are scheduled next month. 2 citywide mailings have occurred with a 3rd mailing in production as we speak. Thank you, Madam Chair and members, for your time. Mounds View City Administrator Niall Zygmunt is also with me today, and we stand for any questions from the committee.
Are there any questions or comments for the testifier or Senator Zhang? Seeing none, Senate File 2549 as amended is laid over. No, I'm sorry. I got ahead of myself. Senate File 3143 is laid over. Thank you very much, Chair. Gentlemen. Members. And now we'll take up the bill that I just laid over. Senate File 2549, Senator Zhang.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sorry, I have this is the one that has the amendment.
Yes.
Senate File 2549. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Just wait a second. Senator Dimmel will move the A1 amendment. Right? Yes? Oh, yeah, I read your mind. All those in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. The amendment is adopted. Senator Zhang.
Again, thank you, Madam Chair and committee members, for hearing Senate File 2549. And I just want to say thank you to Senator Putnam for being a co-author on this bill. As the amendment is putting on there, Senate File 2549 only impacts jurisdictions with local sales and use taxes that were authorized by the legislature in 2021 omnibus bill and have held elections as required by law and received voter approval for the authorized projects. This bill is meant to be a one-time fix addressing significant inflation-related construction cost increases. Members, many projects that were included in the 2021 tax bill were based on 2020 estimates in the early stages of the pandemic. It is not uncommon to see costs increase in 2023 by over 30% from the 2020 cost estimates. And so this bill would allow a few cities to meet the specific criteria from the 2021 bill. With me, I have the mayor of Oakdale within my district, and also we have, I think, was it the city administrator from Wade Park here to testify on the bill.
Welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, and thank you to Senator Zhang for authoring Senate File 2549. For the record, my name is Kevin Zobel, and I have the honor and privilege of serving as mayor of the city of Oakdale. On behalf of my city, I want to thank the legislature for the authority granted in 2021 to pursue a local sales tax to expand our law enforcement building and construct a new public works facility. Madam Chair, since the 2021 omnibus tax bill was passed, city staff and consultants had worked diligently on value engineering exercises to keep project costs down as much as possible, despite significant headwinds brought on by inflation. In November 2022, with material costs and interest rates climbing, city leaders made the conscious yet challenging decision to move forward and put our local sales tax proposals to the voters. We are incredibly grateful to the residents of Oakdale for approving both of these projects on the November 2022 ballot. We fully recognize that the one-time flexibility provided by Senate File 2549 is unconventional, if not unprecedented. But we ask for the committee and the legislature's understanding that these extraordinary cost pressures could not have been anticipated when cities like Oakdale began the local sales tax authorization process more than 3 years ago. In our original cost estimates in early 2020, Oakdale's two projects combined were estimated at $27 million. By 2021, that amount increased to $37 million. In our request during the 2022 legislative session, we asked for legislative approval on $42 million. And here in 2023, Senate File 2549 is necessary to bridge that gap and help cities address these increased project costs due to inflation. Madam Chair and members, with the unanimous support of my City Council colleagues, I ask for your support on Senate File 2549, and I would be happy to stand for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Ashoma Johnson, welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself for the record, she's on Zoom.
No, yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Shauna Johnson, and I am the city administrator for the city of Wake Park. Much of what has been said by Mayor Zabel holds true for Wake Park. So in the interest of time, I won't repeat any of what has already been said. In the city of Wake Park, we were also part of the 2021 omnibus tax bill, and between value engineering and early contingency provisions in our project budgets, we feel the dollar amount authorized in 2021 is going to be relatively close still for us. So our primary concern lies with the number of years authorized to collect the tax. We are still analyzing the impact of inflation on our local sales tax revenue projections and consumer behavior. And we are concerned that 13 years contained in the 2021 law may not be enough time. So Senate File 2549 would provide a mechanism of relief for us by allowing us to increase the number of years to collect the tax by 25% or up to a maximum of 23.75 years. And I want to thank Senators Zhang and Putnam for their work on this challenging issue. And I would be happy to answer any questions that you may have. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Johnson. Questions and comments, Senator Klein.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Senator Zhang. It's an interesting proposal. I can see why there was incentive to bring something like this forward. I guess I have a couple questions which might be most appropriate for council. So this is a statewide expansion of authority. Do we know how many projects would be affected potentially by this?
Madam Chair, Senator Klein, we don't, it's a little bit complicated because some of the cities that would have been, that would be affected by this proposal have already come forward with separate proposals for their individual cities, which we've heard over the last couple of weeks. So if those individual proposals were enacted, this language would not be necessary. There are some cities that were authorized in 2021 that were kind of contemplated in the 2022 omnibus bill that came forward with request for increased amounts of funding or increased durations of time to impose the tax. Those cities have not come a few of those cities have not come forward this year with individual requests, so it's possible that there's another maybe two or three that could be impacted from as a result of the 2021 authorization. I'm not sure if those cities, however, received voter approval for the projects this past fall.
Follow up, Madam Chair.
Sarah Klein.
Thank you. That's helpful. So it's not an enormous number. It's a sort of a handful, I guess, would be the answer. And then the other question I had was when we, at line 1.19, 1.20, when we extend the maturity date of the bonds, again, for council, is that just sort of a wide open extension, or is there some limits around that?
Ms. Pollack?
Madam Chair, Senator Klein, I think this pertains to the language in Chapter 475 pertains to local bonds, and I think the maximum maturity date is 30 years there. So generally, cities come with and something below 30 years. So in their authorization, so if they would need up to 30, this provision would give them that authorization.
Follow up, Madam Chair. So, yeah,
Sarah Klein.
I'm not positive I actually have the answer to my question yet because this extends it beyond the 30 years in statute. So I'm wondering, does that mean it could be 100 years, could be 200 years? It doesn't seem like there's a limitation there, and it might be something worth addressing at some point. And those are the end of my questions, Madam Chair. And I'd like to also just offer an oral amendment. Senator John, it's the tradition of this committee not to have purpose statements in our legislation, in lines 1.17 to 1.9 seem to be a statement of purpose. So I'm going to offer an oral amendment to delete lines 1.7 to 1.9.
Senator Klein moves to delete lines 1.7 to 1.9. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Are there further questions, Senator Nelson?
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. And though you'll many who are at this table last year will remember that we had quite a bit of discussion about this. Something very similar was included in the 2022 Conference Committee Agreement. But I just wanted to, Senator Klein, you asked some very good questions, and the issue is it that, and if you'll think about what's happened since. From 2021 till now, you might remember at a time about a year ago from now how construction costs, had quadrupled, or if not more, just the wood, for example. And so one of the challenges is when our cities pass a resolution and their voters vote on it, and the voters are, if they voted yes, they have promised, the city has promised to say, we're going to do this project and this project and this project, and we only have authorization to do it at these certain amounts. But a lot can change, particularly in these volatile times. And this was a way to try and scope down and narrow so it wouldn't be so broad that we would not want this to be a general law forever, but to really scope it down to the 2021, just those particular sales tax extensions that would have been effective between their voters and the inflation, and trying to get to that impossible situation of promising projects at a certain cost, which you're allowed to have sales tax for, but the costs have just inexplicably gone up. So it's an attempt to try and manage the one situation that we're facing. Fortunately, many of those construction costs have gone down somewhat now. So thank you for those good questions.
Any other comment or questions for Senator Jean? Seeing none, Senate File 2549 as amended is laid over.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee, Chair Rest. Senate File 2403 is in front of us.
I'm sorry, which one was first?
2403.
Mr. Chairman and members, we've been hearing bills dealing on asking for sales tax exemptions for construction projects, et cetera, and Senate File 2403 is no different, and it applies to projects at the at our airport. And it's pretty simple. That's what it does over the next two biennium. And it is a number of projects that would be included. And I would ask Mr. Killian to come forward. Excuse me, out of breath. Come forward to explain what those projects would be.
Welcome to the committee. Mr. Killian, please introduce yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Chairman Klein, members of the Tax Committee. My name is Mitchell Killian. I'm the Vice President of Governmental Affairs with the Metropolitan Airports Commission. Thanks for hearing this bill. A similar provision was included last year in the Tax Committee agreed upon bill. A couple of highlights about things that are going on at MSP I'd like to make sure and give you. What the bill does is a small way helps get our construction program back on track out at MSP. Throughout the pandemic, we lost lots of our capital improvement revenue in many different ways, and this would have the state not charge us sales tax on our construction material while we're trying to get the program back on track. Just as a reminder, you're hearing lots of good news about air traffic returning. This week alone, we had the first flight back to Tokyo, a nonstop after a three-year hiatus of not having that flight returned. But that's 3 years of not having it, and many other issues that we didn't have for a long time. As a reminder, in 2020, we only saw 40% of our normal passenger traffic. In 2021, we saw 60%. And in 2022, we still were down 20%. We only saw 80%. And so at MSP, we're still seeing lack of passengers. That lack of passengers means lack of capital revenue that comes in. Our parking alone usually takes in about $100 million a year in parking revenue. During the pandemic, we saw entire months where we took in less in the entire month than we normally take in a day. And so that affected our capital program. We also have a passenger facility charge that's on your ticket that the airlines collect that stays locally to help do capital programs. We fell way behind with that revenue as well with the lack of passengers. So as we move forward here, we normally do $200 to $400 million in construction. We're expected to do a lot more than that in the next couple of years. We fell behind by nearly $400 million in capital construction. So making that up is very difficult. And what we're let me add one more piece on infrastructure money from the federal government. We were beneficiaries of the infrastructure bill, but unlike some others that were able to maybe do projects ahead of time or move projects up in their project schedules, that infrastructure money just helped to fill a small part of a deep hole from all that lack of revenue that we've had. And so what we're asking the committee to consider is not charge us sales tax while we're trying to climb out of this thing on our construction materials. We think it's a small way that the state can help to get our construction projects back on schedule and keep us kind of moving ahead to try to make up that $400 million in lost. If you'd like me to describe any of the projects, I certainly can.
Madam Chair, Mr.
Killian. So we've got a whole list of things out there, but we have a major public safety building out there that we're going to be working on. Police, fire, operations, 911 dispatch that comes together. If you've been seeing what we did on the G Concourse, we have major gate hold and terminal improvements as we upgauge of aircraft. You're seeing the gate holds need to be upgauged, and so we don't have people sitting in the walkways, plugging in their phones and things. We're improving our terminal. We have several roofing projects and lots of different things going on out there. If you'd like the full details, I'm happy to supply you with them, but we've got nearly $800 million in work in the next year.
Thank you, Mr. Killian. Questions or comments from the committee? Seeing none, Senator Rest, any comments?
No, thank you.
With that, Senate File 2403 will be laid over for possible inclusion. Senator Rest, Senate File 2405 is in front of the committee.
And I believe you have an amendment.
Mr. Chairman, I have an oral amendment.
Senator Rest offers the A1 amendment as an author's amendment. All those in favor say aye.
I thought it was an oral amendment, Ms. Pollack.
I'm sorry, Mr. Sylvia.
Mr. Chair and Senator Rest, there might be two amendments. We have the A1 amendment, which is the clarifying amendment relating to the reference to the Port Authority, and then there's an oral amendment that would delete the section.
Okay.
Senator Rest.
Sorry.
So we will start with the A1.
Yes.
Senator Rest offers the A1 amendment as an author's amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? A1 is adopted. Mr. Sylvia, can you describe the oral amendment?
Mr. Chair.
Or Senator Rest.
I'll just begin. I had thought you had said 2403, so I had that folder out, which is where I was a little bit concerned when there was an amendment that I did not myself have. But every year we get a report from and suggestions from the public finance community on proposals to add conditions and provisions to that section of our law which governs how the financing instruments for financing government, et cetera, are improved or changed in some way, and this bill represents those provisions for this year. The other amendment that I would now offer then is to delete section one.
Senator Rest moves to delete section one. Senator Rest, can you describe the amendment? Senator Rest, can you describe the amendment or the intent?
All it does is it removes the permissive language with of where funds may be invested. Currently, they have to be invested in by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, which does that activity for banks, and we decided to keep it that way rather than at this point including credit unions.
Members, any questions about the oral amendment to delete section one? Seeing none, all those in favor of the oral amendment say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Bill is in the shape you desire.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It may be that we just need further discussion about the inclusion of the credit unions, but for the time being, I wanted to keep the current law. Mr. Bagnoli is here to describe the sections or describe the bill, and I'm going to ask him if he would help me with that.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Bagnoli. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Joe Bagnoli. I'm with Winthrop & Weinstein Law Firm, and I'm here today representing the Minnesota Institute of Public Finance. As Senator Rest mentioned, it's got sort of a psychiatric name to it, the Institute. Essentially, this is an association that consists of people that are involved in public finance. It's lawyers, bankers, and financial advisors all to publicly finance public entities, cities, schools, parks, the state. And every year we come forward, as Senator Rest described, with what we would describe as a technical bill. It's sort of like the Department of Revenue's technical bill. but just focused on public finance articles. So this, the additional thing I can say is many of these provisions were contained in the 2022 Senate omnibus tax bill that, and the final tax bill that was never, I don't think it was ever signed, but many of these were contained in here. The first, two through seven, I'm guessing they're renumbered now, so it'd be one through six, but two through seven essentially extend for school district, towns, counties, Hennepin County, which has its own provision, cities, charter cities, and home rule and statutory cities, the ability to issue debt from 10 years to 20 years. We found over time, we've done this for R22, which is a refrigerant for ice rinks, but we found increasingly over time financing things like fire trucks and other large capital equipment that it would be beneficial to have a 20-year extension. So this does this for all of these provisions. Section, or all of these public entities. Section 8, 9, and 10, 8, 9, and 10, add the reference to essentially this is help to people that are doing this. This is an internal reference. They have to do this already. It essentially tells the lawyers when you're doing issuing debt, many, it's come up a couple of times recently where people don't look at the other section of law that they need to comply with. This says, in addition to this section of law, make sure you look at that section of law. This is essentially helping lawyers so that we don't get into a problem where they haven't complied with another section of law to issue debt. Finally, section 12 and 13 have to do with public facilities that are funded by tax-exempt bonds. Right now, federal tax-exempt bonds are allowed to be used for a certain number of essentially private uses. The most obvious one is district heating projects. There's also some other ones. We have them listed in statute. Recently, in the last, and I'm not sure which federal act in the last couple of years, they've broadened, the feds have broadened the ability to use these tax-exempt bonds to include broadband and some other items. What we've done here is instead of having to go back and add in every time the feds change what can be used, we've just said, we're going to use what federal law permits for these purposes. So it would allow us to use tax-exempt bonds for broadband and some other purposes. Finally, section 14 is essentially clarifying some ambiguity in the statute that literally involves where a comma is placed. And there has been, and I'm going to have trouble if we get into describing this because I've read it 10 times and I could maybe explain it, but essentially it's where a comma is and or not is, but this would eliminate some ambiguity without, we think, changing the intent of the statute. So that's the bill. Appreciate your...
Thank you for the walkthrough, Mr. Bagnoli. Questions or comments from committee members? Senator Rest. With that, Senate File 2405, as amended, will be laid over for possible inclusion. Senator Rest, the last item on the agenda today is Senate File 1405.
Mr. Chairman and members, years ago, the state
in a move toward including and welcoming and incentivizing individual small donors to our political campaigns, instituted a political contribution refund that allowed a refund for individual donors up to $50 in a contribution to a political campaign and $100 to for married couples. Over the years, that has enjoyed less participation in what this bill does, and it's in one section. I will have a minor amendment in a minute. What the bill does is to double the amount that would be available to an individual from $50 to $100, and a couple from $100 to $200. It comes with the support of the chairs of the two major parties, Republicans and Democrats, and my co-author is the extremely knowledgeable Senator Coran in the matters of public finance and campaigns. But in 2007, 58% of all the contributions to campaigns were refunded by the PCR program. In 2008, it was reduced to 45% was refunded. By 2020, it was reduced to 16%. And in 2021, only 13% was refunded. There are probably lots of reasons that people stopped sending in their receipt and the form to get that that amount refunded, but and that data is from the Mr. Sigurdsson from the campaign finance board. But with their support for getting more people involved in public funding of our campaigns, and when I say our, I don't just mean the legislature, but the political parties as well, keeping in mind, too, that in 2002, the amount that was refunded was $3.3 million, and by 2021, that number had been reduced to $618,000. And this method of requesting a refund has not changed. The method itself hasn't changed in over 20 years. It's very paper intensive. Senator Coran is working on a way of streamlining that process that in and of itself, I believe, will incentivize donors so that campaign, for example, campaign treasurer would just have to enter the name and address for the purpose of the refund to on the campaign finance reporter, and that would trigger an automatic check being sent out by the Department of Revenue so that the campaigns or the parties wouldn't have to issue a receipt, and then the recipient wouldn't have to fill out the forms and send it in and wait for the check, and I think that's there. And within his ideas, there are any number of safeguards to make sure that there is no fraud and no sharing of information that is improper. The amendment I'm going to offer, however, addresses a problem of the start date. Right now, we're in the middle of the 2023 year, and I really hadn't that complication of being in the middle of the year to start a program that start from the beginning of the year was pointed out to me yesterday by Senator Weber, and I appreciate it but it, I had to spend a lot of time on it, Senator Weber, Mr. Chairman, and the solution that I believe is going to be supported, at least at this point, by one party this morning, is to just make the start date on the beginning of January 2024. So my amendment, Mr. Chairman, is to move the effective date to contributions starting in January 1 of 2024. And I would ask Ms. Pollack to provide the correct language.
Ms. Pollack.
Mr. Chair and members, the oral amendment from Senator Rest would be on 3.4, delete retroactively from, and then delete 2023 and insert 2024. And then on 3.5, delete 2023 and insert 2024.
Senator Rest, is that the spirit of your amendment?
That's my amendment, Mr. Chairman. I'll speak to it.
Members, this is not the first stop for this bill, so this is not an author's amendment. Questions or comments from the committee on the amendment? All those in favor of the oral amendment, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Amendment is adopted.
Thank you. The dilemma was if we started it July 1 of 2023 and donors had already given some contribution to a candidate, how would they go about getting the refund for the rest of their contribution if it was under the total amount that's allowed, and wrestled with, should they send in another request? Would they have to verify how much of their original contribution was to be included? That would have been one way. Again, very paper intensive. Secondly, the concern about waiting until 2024 was if someone hadn't given a contribution yet and wanted to, why would they do it in 2023 when they could wait for January 1 of 2024 and get it doubled? So the simplest start date for this major change, in the fact that it had never been changed, has, I think, a better and more clear to donors, campaigns, and so forth, that the start date is January 1 of 2024.
Members, any questions or comments to the bill as amended? There are none. And with that, Senator Rest, Senate File 1405 as amended will be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you very much.
Senator Rest, any announcements?
We are meeting now next week on the 4th, correct? And I had hoped that we would be able to skip that hearing, but instead of that, it's going to be one of the fullest days of session. So I'm sorry, folks, but we will be meeting on April 4th.
The Taxes Committee is adjourned.